All right, welcome to the podcast. My name is Doug, and I am a grateful believer in Jesus, and I'm a recovering sex addict. And today is episode number 76, so thank you for listening. I have to be honest, this morning I was not planning on kicking on the mic and doing a recording, but I've gotten two or three emails this week from people that are like, we're listening, it's mattering, and I just felt motivated to do this. I've kind of had this idea in my mental docket for a while to put out there as a podcast. I just needed that final kick in the pants to kind of get it out there. So appreciate those folks that have been emailing, puritypodcast@castamonia.org, and just letting us know you're listening and that it's mattering, and letting us know kind of what topics you want to hear about. But today is one of those random podcasts where you get to kind of hear the Doug rant of the day, or just kind of the ideas that are on my mind. Like I said, they've kind of been brewing in my mental docket for a while, and it's just something I'm really hoping is as meaningful to you as it was to me as I heard these. I would also call this Parable Day, or maybe this is my Parable Podcast, if I like to use alliteration. But this Parable Podcast, I want to talk about a couple different modern-day parables, or one's an Inuit parable and one's a Jewish parable that I've heard recently that I really think are very applicable to my own recovery and hopefully the recovery of others. And in that idea, I really want us to explore this thought process of what are the patterns in my recovery? How do I keep those patterns moving me towards good? How do I keep those patterns moving me in a positive direction? Because we all know that in our addiction, we had some really negative patterns. We had some things that led us away from sobriety, and we didn't even know that we were in these patterns. It wasn't until I started doing kind of these autopsy of a relapse, or really starting to look at a slip, that I started to see patterns in my own behavior. That if I had a relapse on a Saturday, or I had a slip on a Saturday, that really was because of some things that maybe happened Wednesday or Thursday or Friday leading up to that. So when I work with guys, and I have guys that, you know, I sponsor, when I talk to them about a slip or a relapse, usually that's what we see is, hey, this has been going on since Monday, and now it's a week later, and that's what happens. It's because these patterns start to take over, and it feels natural, and so we don't recognize them. So really, what I want us to do today is really even look at our own patterns and be mindful of what's happening in my own life. Am I feeling a little differently than I was the day before? Why is that? What is this negative feeling? What is this positive feeling? Remember, feelings aren't bad. They're just, you know, they can be signs for us to take a look at. So whatever we're feeling, just to be honest about that, and then be able to really slow down and talk about it with somebody. Maybe pick up the phone or text somebody and just say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is where I'm afraid it's going to go. And I just need to speak this out there so it has less likelihood of actually happening. I've talked to a lot of guys that say, you know, I feel like I'm on the verge of a relapse. And if I was early in recovery, I didn't know what that meant. I'm like, so you're planning on acting out? Like, I don't even get what that means. But what that means is that they feel like their bodies are telling them, we need something else. We need some other medication. And so being aware of that, you realize you're stuck in some pattern and trying to break that before you do act out. And just speaking that really does make a big difference. So, you know, if nothing else today, try to take this idea of being mindful about what are the patterns that lead you down a path you don't want to go anymore. What are those feelings? What are those emotions? What are those places you drive? What are the things you do that create this template that you seem to play out over and over? And I think you'll start to realize how non-creative you were in your acting out. You know, I thought, oh, I act out in all these different ways, but no, I really didn't. It was always the same pattern. It was usually for the same emotions. It was usually for the same reasons. And so it really just helps us be able to identify that before it happens. It lets us see that a lot of these things are more premeditated than we think that they are. So if we slip and we relapse, it's real easy to say, well, it just happened. I didn't know it was going to happen. It just happened, you know, and that's usually the first thing we want to say. And I know why. I've said that same thing before too. But it's really about something that was a lot more premeditated that we want to make it. We're trying to medicate some emotion that we knew was there that we chose to ignore or chose to medicate in the wrong way. We made plans because we wanted to feel a certain way. We wanted to see if we could do a certain thing. And so that led us down a path that, if we're really honest and look back, we know was a little more premeditated than we'd like to admit. And so when we start to face that, when we start to look at that head on, eyeball to eyeball, that can go away. And that can be something that we can really benefit from. All right, so let's jump into that first parable. So this is one that I actually heard from the pulpit not long ago. Our preacher was talking about it from a book called The Silent War. It is a book that was written, and I want to reach out to the author, see if he wants to be on the podcast. But the book was written from a perspective of someone that was really engaged in, you know, sexual addiction, whether in pornography and clubs and all those kind of things. And so now he's gone back to look at the lives of those women that were affected by that, because we like to say, oh, it doesn't affect anyone, or they want to be a part of this, but really looking at how does it negatively impact these women and men that are involved in the pornography industry. So it's an idea of putting a face and a name on these people that, you know, he talks about, you know, people that are on stage performing for men, they always have a fake name. And it's some, you know, ludicrous name that, you know, nobody would probably really be named. But that's what men want. We don't care their real name. We don't care who they are, because that takes away from that experience. And so the more we get to know someone or put a face and a name with them, the less likelihood we are of going down that path. So it's a great book, A Silent War. It's definitely worth reading, definitely worth looking into. And I really think that that's where I got this story. This parable. So it's an Inuit parable that's out there. So it's definitely findable, but I'm going to read it from another website where I found it. And then we'll talk a little bit about its connection, at least in my mind, to sex addiction and pornography addiction. So it says, blood. Once a wolf smells blood, it becomes irrational and bloodthirsty. Their primal need to hunt and kill outweighs any pack mentality or sense of self-preservation at all. So the Inuits came up with a simple trap, and they hunted the wolves with their own weakness in mind. An Inuit hunter would simply just dip the end of a knife in blood, and then they could stick it down in the ice or bind it to something solid where it wouldn't move. So there's this ice that's holding this blade that's got frozen blood on the end. So wolves would then catch scent of this blood. Even from miles away, wolves can smell that. And they would come to this knife and see, oh, it's an easy meal. This is just right here for me to take. So they surround the blade, and they would all start to lick the blade, slicing their own tongues in the process. But as they do so, they're unable to distinguish between their own blood and the blood that was on the blade to begin with. So they keep licking the blade, thinking that they're going to be getting a good meal. So blood splatters on the snow around them. And those the wolves are all working themselves into a frenzy, not realizing that they're just lacerating their own mouths, and they're slowly bleeding to death. Even if there was a smarter wolf that decided, you know what, this isn't food, and I'm going to turn away from this, and I'm going to walk away, it was too late for them too. They were covered in their own blood, and then now they were easy targets for other wolves that were angry and hungry and dizzy and confused. So they got surrounded by the other ones, and then the pack turned on itself in anger. So the idea being in this Inuit parable that we fall prey to our own weaknesses if we're not aware of it. So when I think of this, you know, blood that's on this knife that's out there, I think of, you know, the sex addiction that I had or the pornography addiction that I had that looked like it was just out there for me to just, oh, this is an easy thing. It's a good meal. It'll feel good. It's what I need. And then as I start to become involved in that, I didn't realize that I'm only hurting myself, and I'm continuing to hurt myself until I'm so weak I can't even stand. I just keep doing the same thing over and over and over, thinking that something better will eventually come. But the whole while, I'm just becoming weaker and weaker and weaker. I was just blown away with this parable, the idea that our own thirst leads us to destruction. Our own hunger leads us to destruction. Because we're listening to the wrong voice. We're listening to that primal voice in our heads that's just saying, just do this, it'll feel good. And we take the feeling and make that the very driver of our decision making. Rather than taking a step back going, wait, this isn't adding up. This doesn't seem to make sense. Why is this so easy? Why is this just stuck out here in the middle of nowhere? Why is it not filling? Why is there no smell of an animal? All these things that should have made sense in the parable by just stepping back and looking at it are true in my own walk. What if I had just stopped and said, is this really good for me? Is this leading me closer to God? Is this making me a better person? Is it the best use of my time? All of these things would have been a quick answer and a quick way to go, you know what, this isn't what I need. That this quick cotton candy version of what I'm looking for is not going to be it. So we just don't have this realization of what this addiction is doing to us, right? We just fall weaker and weaker, but I continue to lick that blade and just cut my tongue up even more and more and more. There's a reminder that hanging with the wrong crowd can do it too. I know I've fallen prey to that as well. Just saying, well, I was just there because they were all there, right? They all wanted to go to this club. I had to go. I was out of town. I didn't have anywhere else to go. All these things can lead us down the wrong path just as easily as leading the group ourselves. So all that to be a reminder, how does this play out in your own life? How have, if you look back and think of that blade, how have you done that to yourself? How have you been easy kill for the evil one? You know, I found that the devil's not actually that creative. He usually is pretty obvious if we're looking for it. So where are the knives that are sticking out in your own life now, right? Do you see them? Are you aware of them when they pop up? Do you go, oh, there it is. I see that blood-covered knife right there. He's not going to get me with this one. Because usually, like I said, most of the time they're extremely obvious. When I first got into recovery, I remember, I probably told this story on the podcast, I just can't remember, but I remember going to a big box store, and I won't say the big box store, but I remember going to the big box store. I was looking for something. I was actually looking for something for podcasting, but I parked the car, I go in, I get the item, I come back out, and there is a girl, high heels, like short skirt, the whole like stereotypical streetwalker look, right next to the car saying, hey, can I get a ride? I was like, how obvious are you, devil, that this is what you have to do? And of course, to answer that, I did say no and I left, just to be clear with that. But I realized right then and there that sometimes the devil doesn't even try to hide it. That he's just like going to try whatever the easiest thing is just to see if he can get our attention and if our primal brain will kick in instead of some of that logic that we need to have. So I just ask that when you think about patterns, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, that we start to think, where are these knives that are sticking out? What are the patterns I keep falling for? Do I keep licking the same knife thinking something's going to change? Am I really killing myself with this behavior? What are the things that we see and how can we change them? And then how can we lead others away from that? How can we tell others, hey, look right there. You see that knife? I know it smells good, but that is not going to lead you in the right place, and explain why and lead people to the meal that they need to be having. And I probably twisted this parable too far, but hopefully that's something that is meaningful to you and your recovery in the same way that it's meaningful to me. And it's just sad to look back on myself that way and to see myself as this staggering wolf with a tongue that's scraped all off, drowning in my own blood and just dying because I just thought I was getting a good meal, with air quotes. There's another parable that comes to mind that I looked up and found. I actually found it from a Jewish source from Chabad.org, where the author, the rabbi, says that there's no magic in recovery, just miracles. And I thought that was a powerful saying. And I think I've heard it before. It's probably one of those adages that's used in AA and addiction recovery all the time. But I love that there's no magic in recovery, just miracles. Because I can see those miracles in my own life and in the miracles of the other brothers that I walk with, miracles of listeners that have emailed saying, hey, I used to do this and this is what I do now. Those are huge, huge stories. And so this story, I want to read that to you as well. And it's called How It Works, Not Why, and it's a recovery parable. An addict is driving along, all alone in his car, one night on an empty highway. He's depressed beyond words, thinking how miserable he is and how he would do anything to get sober and have a normal life. Suddenly, as he's zooming down the highway and thinking, he hears the voice of God. I hear you're looking for sobriety, says God. That's my imitation of God's voice. Yes, he says in awe. Well, you're lucky today, says God, because I happen to have sobriety, and it can be yours for a reasonable price. How much, says the guy. Well, how much have you got, says God. I've got $20, I think, in my wallet. Well, you're in luck, says God. The price of sobriety today happens to be exactly $20. But that's everything I've got, the man says. If I give you all the money, how am I going to buy gas for this car? And God says, a car? Oh, well, now I see the price of sobriety is $20 and your car. Wait, if I give you my car, how am I going to get to work tomorrow? Work, God says. You have a job? Well, now the price of sobriety is $20, your car, and your job. So the man says, but if I give you my job, then I'm not going to get paid at all. How am I going to pay the mortgage this week? Whoa, you have a mortgage, says God. You mean you have a house? I hate to tell you this, but the price of sobriety just went up a little bit more. It's now $20, your car, your job, and your house. But where am I going to live with my family, says the man. Family? You've got a wife and kids? Oh, yeah. The price of sobriety is now $20, your car, your job, your house, and your wife and your kids. At this point, the man decides, I just need to shut up. So are you willing to take this deal, asks God. The man simply nods. So God takes everything, and he's about to give the man his sobriety. But one thing, says God, before I give you sobriety, there's something else I want you to do for me. So the man nods again. And God says, see this $20? It's not your $20, it's mine. You know that. But I want to give it to you and you to take it from me. And I want you to spend it as you would want me to spend it. And you see this car? It's not your car anymore, it's my car. But I want you to use it as I would, so I give it back. And this job and your family, they're not yours, they're mine. But I want to give them to you to use them as I would, because I want you to take care of them the way that I would. Can you do all of that for me? The man nods again. And then here it is. Here's your sobriety. And he gives the man his sobriety. And I think that's such a powerful parable because it talks about this idea that our sobriety isn't a standalone item. It's not in a compartmentalized box over here. It is a part of us that's intertwined with everything in us. So in order to get sobriety, we have to give everything to our higher power, everything to God. Once we do that, we do see that magic does happen in that God gives it all back, but it's with a different lens. I don't see my family now as mine. You know, I talked in another podcast about I have my small circle and that's my things that are my family, my life, my car, my things, but they're really the things that God gave me that I get to be blessed with here on this earth. And so when I see them in that lens, boy, I treat them a lot differently. If I borrow somebody's car or if I am in something that's of great value for somebody else and they let me use it, I treat it very, very carefully. And the same thing is true if we look at our own life as what God gave it back to us. Then yes, we can have sobriety, but we can have so much more because God let us use it. And now we want to use it as He would. So when I have money that's in my pocket, when I have a car, when I have a home, I want to use them very differently than maybe I did before when I thought they were just mine. For my own comfort, for my own joy, for my own amusement is very different than when I have money or a house or a car that's God's and I need to use it like He would. Well, now I might start doing things very, very differently. So I hope those two parables, the parables of the Inuit and the parable there at the end, really help us see what God can do in our lives. What we can do when we recognize our own patterns. And then what we can do when we change that and we just give it to God and say, you know what? It's yours. If you want it, you have it. And if you want me to have it, I will use it the way you would want to use it. So recovery can look a lot of ways to a lot of people. Hopefully that these 76 episodes have helped you as you continue to find other podcasts that work for you. I hope you let us know about those. I love to cross-reference podcasts. I love to have other authors and podcasters on the show. So email us at puritypodcast@castamonia.org and let us know. If you're emailing, telling me your story, that is awesome. I love to hear those stories. I love to pray for you. I have a prayer list where I keep guys' names that have emailed that saying, hey, this is going on. I try to check back in with those guys to see what's happening. But if you have show ideas or you want to be on the show, email us. Let us know. We'll set up a time that we can do a recording. We can set up a time to get your testimony or your idea out there. Because like I said, I'm just a guy with a microphone. So, I want to share this with other people and I want it to be a blessing to others as well. So I've referenced a couple things. So remember, you can go to Shabbat.org. Definitely just something I've found in looking for that article. But that's something that has that recovery article from our Jewish friends there. And then the idea of reading The Silent War. I gave you a synopsis and one small story that was out of that book, but definitely worth a read. That is by Henry Rogers, and we'll try to get that up on our website, which is castamonia.org, and then you can do the / podcasts, and that will take you directly to our podcast page where all of our books are referenced there. You can click on them, go to our Amazon page. We get a little tiny kickback from you ordering them that way. But, of course, it's more important that you get the resource wherever you get it. So hopefully you can find that book as well. Again, PurityPodcast@castamonia.org comes right to George or I. We love to hear your feedback and your stories. Please keep listening. But remember that as you're walking on this road of recovery, you are not walking alone.